Next matter is in re the interest of Jesse M.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Nicholas Worth. I represent the appellant, the natural mother of the three children at issue. This is an appeal from a final order of the Separate Juvenile Court of Douglas County that was entered into in September 2010. That September order was a continuation of a hearing that initiated in July 2010 on the appellant's motion to have the placement of her children placed into her home. Some preliminary matter, Your Honor, is my brief and my argument, and indeed the law at the time that we went into this hearing, was that 43-285 stand for the proposition that when the Department of Health and Human Services, who has custody and guardianship of children under the juvenile court, when they offer a plan to the court and recommendations to the court, that plan is presumed to be in the best interest of the children. My argument is that while that plan may have been in the best interest of the children, I overcome that burden by preponderance of the evidence through exhibits and the live testimony of the mother's therapist, that not only was their recommendation for overnights and unsupervised visits appropriate, but that full placement into the parental home was appropriate. The court saw fit to adopt neither my recommendation or the recommendation of the Department of Health and Human Services, and it kept visitation at the level of semi-supervised and added an additional provision of the rehabilitation plan, that being an additional therapeutic goal that was not recommended by the department. Thanks to our legislature, LB 648 was passed and signed into law, which effectively does away with that presumption that the plan is in the best interest and does away with the burden of proof of the opponent of that plan to overcome the recommendation by preponderance of the evidence. To me, that puts us back to a situation where this court essentially reviews the entire case, the entire record, de novo.
Well, but that wasn't the law at the time that your case was determined, was it?
It was not, Your Honor, no. The law
so
at the time,
wouldn't that still apply for purposes of this appeal?
I'm a little uncertain, Your Honor. I would ask that the court apply the standard of the law that it was at the time that the hearing happened, because I do believe that the record is clear that the evidence that I offered, and in fact on that second day that the state offered, did overcome by preponderance of the evidence the presumption that the state's plan was just simply to go to overnight unsupervised was in the children's best interest. So, but I think even if the court were to just apply a straight de novo review of the record, it would still find that an independent review of the record from that July hearing and that September hearing would show that the appropriate thing for the court to have done was to adopt a transition of the children to their parents' home, either unsupervised and overnights, or what my request was and remains today for placement. I did make an argument in the alternative that if the court didn't deem placement possible, that it should adopt the department's original plan, which was to merely move to transition to overnight and unsupervised visits.
The change in the law that says we no longer have the presumption that the department's recommendations are in the best interest, that doesn't really go into effect until the following year, isn't that correct?
It is, Your Honor.
After this hearing.
Yeah, I just wanted, I'm sure the court was obviously aware of the change in the law, but my argument, again, just to be clear, is that the previous law, the 43-285, that does have a presumption, that does have a burden of proof to overcome that presumption, should be applied to this case. Even though we do know now that that's not going to be the law here come next July or approximately thereof.
So whatever we say here isn't going to mean too much as far as any precedent for future cases.
Possibly not, Your Honor, but I think it may have a significant amount of precedent on the facts. And the facts are that you have a situation where this family has been involved since December of 2008 with the juvenile court process and has been participating in it. Since December of 2008, we're coming up on 3 years now almost, they have had nothing but compliance and successful compliance with the service provisions that have been asked of them. In fact, for almost a year during the pendency of the adjudication, these were my client and her family were voluntarily participating in what we knew to be appropriate services should the case be adjudicated, and it was. And it was found true. And the issue is, Your Honor, quite clearly that all three of these children want to be returned to their parents. My client lives with her husband, the father of all three children, was filed on But the court found that the evidence was not sufficient to adjudicate the children as it related to him. All three children want to be at home. Their therapist reports speak as clear as day that these kids are being therapeutically harmed by their continuation out of the care of both of their parents. And you have 3 years of evidence, and the court had 3 years of evidence, and certainly the exhibits offered in July and September of 2010 encompassed almost the entirety of the 2010 up until that point, that showed no risk of harm, no safety concerns, nothing whatsoever that would show that these parents couldn't appropriately and effectively parent their children safely if they were removed home. The semi-supervised visitation was the level it was at. That, at the time, simply means that there's a person that checks in and out. They were having up to 60 hours a week of contact with their children over the summer months, again, without one instance of a concern of inappropriate discipline, inappropriate abuse, inappropriate behaviors whatsoever, nothing but a positive bond.
Wasn't part of the problem that the court didn't feel that the mother addressed the issue that caused all this to come before the court initially?
I think that's the only issue, Your Honor, because there's no other evidence in any other besides that point that would have allowed the court to rely on to keep the children outside of the home. That is the one sole issue left. But
and as I understand it, the mother did not admit to actually burning this child, but rather said as the parent she was responsible for allowing it to happen. I think that's the
correct
result she used.
And
do you think that that caused the court concern as to exactly what did happen, that this could possibly place the children back in a dangerous situation?
In a vacuum, that set of circumstances likely should and would cause a court concern. However, the therapist wrote reports and testified on the record to fill in those questions and say, just because she hasn't told me, yes, I did this, does not mean that she has not made therapeutic progress and addressed the goal herself. She went so far as to clarify, admitting she did the specific act is not the same as not taking responsibility for what happened. And it may be semantics, but at the same time, the issue is, do you have a licensed, trained therapist that says the issues that caused this case to come into care are no longer there, and that's what happened in this case? The children's therapists are more than aware of the issues, more than aware of the children's behaviors, and more than aware of what happened, are work hand in hand with the mother's therapist. And I think, again, I think it's Exhibit 44, Dr. Gross, that is the most telling evidence that not only is it in these children's best interest to go home, but it is contrary to their best interest to remain out of the home. These children are languishing in foster care. They don't know why they're no longer in the home. They want to go back home. Nobody will dispute that they are scared of their mother or scared of their father. They want to be at home. The record supports it. And I think what is equally clear is that there's no evidence to not support it. There is nothing offered by the guardian ad litem. There is nothing offered by the state, except for in September, the state offered all the reports supporting the transition, to say that it would not be in these children's best interest. They're going to simply rely on the reason the children came into care 3 years ago, or approximately almost 3 years ago as we sat here today, and not rely on anything else. They're placing themselves in the position of a therapeutic provider to say, well, I disagree with this therapist because if I was her, I would need to say, yes, I did this specific act. Yes, I take responsibility for it. And yes, I'll never do it again. And yes, here's why it happened. And yes, here's why it won't happen again. They're placing themselves and totally discounting the therapeutic opinion of the two therapeutic providers before them. Again, the thousands of hours that these children have been in front of their parents over this amount of time would have given the court and the service providers an indication of whether or not there was going to be harm if these children weren't placed in the home.
Does the record reflect whether or not the mother participated in any type of therapy with individual or family therapists to discuss the burning issue?
Yes, she participated with her individual therapist on that issue, and she participated in therapy with Dr. Gross, I believe. If the court's referring to that Jennifer Sharp therapist in the summer, that was a time to reintroduce family therapy. These children had already been in their own therapy and been discharged prior to this case even coming to disposition because they had found there to be no future issues. But because of the time that they had remained in care, they started to exhibit behaviors. So the mother voluntarily went to the school counselor, got a referral from that counselor to that Jennifer Sharp, and I think the record was clear, both from Deb Ross, who met with Ms. Sharp, that she was not conducive to the to actually getting to the issues and was much more combative, and I reserve remaining time for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Has there been some discussions concerning the division of time?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. I would like to have 5 minutes for
Okay, so we'll have the yellow light come on after 4 minutes so that you'll know you have 1 minute left.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Paulette Merrill, and on behalf of the Douglas County Attorney's Office, I represent the state of Nebraska, the appellee in this matter. Your Honors, to the state, it boils down to one thing. The mother has not fully addressed what brought the children to the attention of the court. And it is true, as Mr. Worth points out, this case has been with us for a while. We have been through several therapists and visitation workers and have had lots of services that have come into play. But the mother has not addressed fully what had brought the children to the court's attention. And that was the fact of the petition, which was found true on each of the counts against the mother, that Jesse came under harm in her care. And while it is normally the preference, as Law would point out, that Department of Health and Human Services, that their case plans be fully adopted, It is not only the court's to their discretion to look elsewhere, but they are not bound by these Department of Health and Human Services recommendations if they believe that the children will be still placed in harm's way.
Well, isn't the department's recommendation supposed to be receiving a higher degree of credibility than the other evidence initially? I mean, isn't there a preference to the department's recommendation by statute?
I think that there may be a preference for it, but I think that the court, the separate juvenile court, would look at all of the evidence presented.
So there has to be evidence presented that would overcome that?
Yes, Your Honor.
And what do you think the best evidence of that in this case would be?
The best evidence to overcome what the
department recommended?
We had a couple of hearings about that, Your Honor. And the therapists who were on the stand, there was a Deborah Rash, and she indicated that the mother had dealt with some goals, but she was rather vague as to some specific goals and indicated that this fell far short of the mother fully admitting that she had harmed Jesse while he was in her care.
Do you think that's a prerequisite to having the child returned, that the mother has to specifically admit to what she did?
Absolutely.
And why do you think that?
Because if she doesn't admit it, then I don't believe that she can get to the core of being able to keep these children safe. Absolutely.
Do you have any legal authority that says that that has to be the case?
Just that the state believes, Your Honor, that it is in the best interest, safety, and welfare of the children that once a mother has been adjudicated or a party has been adjudicated, that we look to a plan for full rehabilitation, and that has not been met in this case. The mother, in fact, has dealt with more than one therapist, Your Honors, and in each case, when she is getting close to perhaps saying, this is what I did, this is what has happened, she simply takes steps to dismiss that person. So the state believes that this refusal to recognize the issues, the refusal to deal with them repeatedly to the point of getting professionals removed from the treatment team, and the refusal to specifically address the burns inflicted on minor child Jesse was something that was found true by the juvenile court, the separate juvenile court of Douglas County, and it underscores the risk of harm in which these children will be placed if they were to be placed back in the home. It is in the best interest of these children, therefore, to affirm the separate juvenile court's findings. And with that, I'll pause for questions, Your Honors.
Didn't the mother admit that she had not kept the child safe?
Yes, Your Honor. State still believes that falls far short. Not keeping the child safe may be something, a lot less onerous than having a burn inflicted upon him.
So it's your position that's just not enough?
Yes, Your Honor. It is. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Again, counsel, when the yellow light comes on, you'll have 1 minute left. But we'll let you have some water before you start.
Okay. May it please the court, opposing counsel, Ms. Merrill. My name is Martin Cannon. I'm the guardian ad litem in the case. In brief response to what Mr. Worth has argued, Your Honors, the juvenile court may disregard the recommendations in this plan where they are patently absurd. That's what's going on here. You have in the record before you the opinion of Dr. DeLay. I believe it's Exhibit 30. I don't recall the citation of the transcript, in which he says that this mother is either innocent or she has significant sociopathic, psychopathic tendencies. This case involved a lengthy trial, capably defended, and a verdict by a judge who is not flippant. The verdict is the law of the case. It is reasonable to suppose that the mother here is a psychopath. And yet we are here today not to appeal that ruling, which was wisely not appealed, but because of an idea that's run amok. The idea is a good one, an important one. And of course that's the idea that a person doesn't have to incriminate herself and doesn't have to assist the state in proving its case against her. The distortion of it, though, is that she has to be somehow protected from the practical consequences when she declines to do so. That's not even realistic in a criminal case. You don't hear a complaint in a criminal case where a reduction of charges or outright immunity are conditioned on a person testifying against his co-defendants, that the privilege is violated. You don't hear a complaint that in federal court, the downward departure, or in any court, the recognition that a person has acknowledged responsibility or aided the prosecution at the time of sentencing is a violation of the privilege. And those are in criminal cases where there's only one person in the courtroom with rights and where we give those rights wide berth. But here the mother is not charged with a crime. She's charged with a duty. And her children are parties to the case. Their right to be safe in her care weighs against her right to care for them. Their rights need to be secured by meaningful efforts ordered by the court to address the problem. And at the core of that, obviously, is frankly addressing the conduct in question. So what have we got here? We have caseworkers and therapists that misunderstand the privilege. They knew from the get-go that this lady was not going to talk about the actual problem. They can't make her talk about it, so they just put it over in the broom closet, shut the door, and forget about it. And what they do instead then is come up with a bunch of goals, short-term goals, dealing with issues that all of us have in our lives that have no apparent relationship whatsoever to what happened to Jesse.
We don't know that, though, do we? We don't know what caused the action that resulted in the burn.
That is exactly right. We don't know what caused it. We do know that the goals that were put in place have no apparent relationship to the problem because it's never been addressed. So we have goals dealing with poor communication skills. We have goals dealing with, stress, maybe excessive discipline. But there is no evidence anywhere in the record that this was excessive discipline. There's no evidence it was discipline at all. There's no evidence that it resulted from poor communication skills. So when we come up with these issues that we're going to address, when we have no reason for even thinking they're issues, and then we're going to be happy because she's addressed them, we're committing a willful disregard of the reason the case came into court to begin with. We have, and you have, hundreds of pages, dozens of workers, but zero evidence of why this lady burned her son. Zero evidence that any of the causes were addressed. There is absolutely no reason to think that these children are any safer in her care today than they were 3 years ago when they were removed. And it's as good to say they shouldn't have been removed to begin with. This whole 3 years has been a charade.
We don't have anything in the record that really shows that she is the one who did the burning.
We do have something in the record, Judge. We have the verdict of the court, which made a finding after a trial that the burns occurred. They were non-accidental. I don't recall the language of the complaint, but this was not a glancing injury. It was not a harmlessly brief contact with the cigarette. This lady planted a lit cigarette on the 7-year-old skin of her young son. That's the psychopathic aspect. It cannot be disregarded. To do so gives the rights of these children short shrift, and the court should not sanction it.
Thank you. How much time does the appellant have left?
We have 11
seconds. Counsel, we'll let you get settled before we start the clock.
Thank you, Judge. Just to respond, you heard it both. They're placing themselves in the eyes of the therapist. These cases that say, yeah, you can't incriminate yourself, but then you do so at your own dismay if you don't make therapeutic progress. The therapist said she made progress. Just because they didn't do it to the courts or to opposing counsel's satisfaction is frankly irrelevant. The record supports a reversal. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The matter will be deemed submitted. Thank you for being here this afternoon. Counsel are excused.